Good evening, this is Lehigh Valley Discourse, and you are listening to QLV. QLV, Queer Lehigh Valley, brings leading-edge conversations about LGBTQIA+ culture and community of the Lehigh Valley to WDIY listeners every month, including interviews with our neighbors, elected officials, and community leaders that will inspire acceptance and inclusion. My name is Justin Parker Fields, he, him pronouns, and while I'm pretty excited to become the newest volunteer host here with WDIY and to take on the chair from Adrian Changer, who helped create the framework of this program, that I hope to continue with conversations from the Lehigh Valley LGBTQ community. A little about me, I am a community leader and a co-founder of Change Now, a local nonprofit with the focus on the unsheltered neighbor population here in the Lehigh Valley. I am also the co-founder and lead organizer for Equality and Justice with Black Lives Matter Lehigh Valley. Frankly, I care about the Lehigh Valley community, but more importantly, the people that reside in it. I grew up in Allentown and understand that with the right people in position to move this region forward, it will thrive from equity, inclusivity, and proactive change. In my experiences, I have engaged community stakeholders, elected officials, leadership from local nonprofits, and those hoping to make real change in this world. Also, I'm the proud father of Shiley and Shamir, proud partner to Kevin, and our 5 cats. So yes, I am a cat dad. So you, our loyal listeners, thank you for your support. As we know, you could be anywhere doing anything right now, but we're glad you're here with us. We have an important show tonight about equity and inclusion with a topic that has many people at times confused, uneducated, and misinformed on transgender people. 2 weeks ago, I got to witness an historical event downtown at City Hall in Allentown, the Transgender Day of Visibility flag raising. I shouldn't be, but I was shocked at the attendance and the outpouring of support that day. There was a lot of love, emotion, tears, and happiness from the organizers and the attendees included. We reached out to Allentown Mayor Matt Turk, who was present at the event, and touched on why this flag raising was needed and necessary. Here are his comments.
We were thrilled to be one of the first communities in the Lehigh Valley to raise the transgender flag in a show of support for our transgender residents and community members. The city of Allentown has led for years on anti-discrimination ordinances to promote a more inclusive city, and this was just the next step for us to show that Allentown is a welcoming and diverse city that has a strong commitment to all of our community members, particularly showing a welcome toward our LGBTQ+ community members. The center of a flag raising like that, and we did it on Transgender Day of Visibility. People want to feel seen, right? That's like the core of this thing, is that people want to be seen for who they are. And I've met so many awesome people along this journey who had felt like they hadn't been seen before. And for me to recognize them with something like that gives them, they feel like they're represented, and that carries over. It's broader than the transgender thing. It goes to our Latino brothers and sisters in Allentown. They have not felt seen or felt heard. For instance, we have a transgender employee in our public works department who, he had not felt like he had been seen before in our city as an employee, and it was a moment for him. It was a new day in Allentown. So that level of representation, seeing people in government that look like you, that hear you and see you, is encouraging.
I am having a fangirl moment because I am here with not one, but two rock stars of our local community scene. Corinne Goodwin, Executive Director of the Eastern PA Trans Equity Project, and Chloe Cole, Program Coordinator of Project Silk, are here in the building. So Chloe and Corinne, thank you both so much for joining me.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks. We're so excited to be here and have this conversation.
I'm excited to have you both here.
I just want to say that I fangirl whenever Chloe's around.
Stop. No, I fangirl whenever I see y'all doing your thing.
So yeah, that effect, Chloe.
Not me. Not me.
Corinne, for those who might not be familiar with you or your work, can you provide us with a little backstory on who you are and what it is that you do?
Oh, yeah, sure. So I am, my pronouns are she and they. I am 62 years old. I tell everybody I look like I'm 35, but I'm actually 62.
Yes.
Yeah, because, you know, Photoshop. But I'm the executive director of Eastern Pennsylvania Trans Equity Project. We're an organization that's dedicated to empowering trans people while building community and promoting social justice. I am the proud father to my 36-year-old theater kid, Ken, and I'm married to my wonderful spouse, Deb. It'll be in another couple weeks, it'll be 40 years.
Wow, congratulations. Yeah. You're a rock star. And Chloe, tell us a little bit about yourself. Who is Chloe?
Hi, so my name's Chloe. I use she and they pronouns. I was born and raised in Allentown. I am an activist, a poet, a caregiver, but most importantly, someone who likes to shift narrative and like change how we operate and serve people in our city. So, and the Lehigh Valley in general. I started a company called Basic Poetry, which really started my activism and advocacy around all types of issues. And then I met the brilliant and amazing Corinne Goodwin. And I was really lucky to be asked to be on the board of the Eastern PA Trans Equity Project and do work for and alongside her for trans folks. And then in my day job, I am the program coordinator of a drop-in program called Project Silk Lehigh Valley, where we give, you know, youth comprehensive health services from where they're at, you know. So we do substance abuse, you know, care and counseling. We do HIV AIDS care. And then we also connect youth to other services that they may need.
Wow. And then sometime in there, they find sleep.
And sleep. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I get a solid 5 hours a night, I'd say.
Oh, well, that's better than nothing.
That's right.
So let's get into it. This week, HB 972, a bill that would prohibit trans women and girls from playing sports in teams designated for women and girls, passed the PA House with its companion bill, SB 1191, currently in the Senate as we speak.
The House passed the bill 115-84. One Republican voted no, and four Democrats voted for it. Before the vote, lawmakers talked about whether the bill would violate the U.S. Constitution's Equal Protection Clause and a federal law. That law, Title IX, prohibits education programs from discriminating by sex. The U.S. Department of Education says that includes gender identity.
I think it speaks volumes when anyone advocates for our community, especially for our children, youth, and young adults. Chloe, I'll direct this one at you. Why are safe spaces needed, and were they around when you were growing up?
So, and this is a great question. So, one, space is needed for folks to just, you know, come together. Community is one of the most healing things, and it's so important to human experience to have a healthy and safe community. So safe spaces, I think oftentimes, and I like to use safe versus brave, like brave spaces, because we can't always keep people safe, right? Mm-hmm. Like I think emotionally sometimes people might get triggered, you know, there might be an argument in the safe space. So I say brave space, right? To say that like this space is structured to be as safe as possible with the intention to give community and support young folks. They are so important because oftentimes, especially when we're talking about LGBTQ plus youth, suicide rates are so high, mm-hmm. but also just mental health challenges in general. So having that space where you can be yourself, ask questions, get services is essential. As far as like having a safe space, when I was younger, no, right? Like, I think a lot of that was developed amongst my queer friends. I think of, like, all of the young folks that I grew up with in high school, at Dierff High School. We created a queer space for us to exist and struggle and have strife and really try to process, like, who we are. So we developed that on our own. And there wasn't many safe spaces. You know, this was, like, 10 years ago. When I was in high school. So, yeah.
And I'm glad I see a lot of in the Lehigh Valley and maybe could use more of it, information and knowledge sharing and resource sharing. So that way, for those who don't know of these safe, and I love that you say brave space, I'm going to use that now, they know where those resources are at. Super important. Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Corinne, the Parental Rights and Education Bill, also dubbed as the Don't Say Gay Bill, was recently signed into law by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. What are your thoughts on the impact this has on parents or children from grade school to high school level that identify as LGBTQ?
Yeah, so Before I even dive into that, I just want to say that there's a similar bill being circulated in the Pennsylvania State Senate right now. So just a couple weeks ago, one of our illustrious state senators announced their intent to launch a Don't Say Gay bill in Pennsylvania. So write your state senators, please, and your state House representatives and tell them how you feel about these things. You know, I think that when you look at whether it's the Don't Say Gay bills, it is the sports bans like HB 972, which you mentioned, or, you know, what will certainly be coming down the pike in Pennsylvania here, I think within the next 6 months, you know, medical bans for transgender youth, you know, all of these things, what they serve to do is to further isolate young people. They isolate young people who are already isolated. I met a young non-binary individual the other day. They're actually the child of Rep. Joseph Hohenstein, who is a non-binary person, and they actually spoke at the Capitol the other day when we were there lobbying. And just what an amazing young individual. They're like 25 years old, and you can just see that because they've had an affirming family and an affirming experience, they're going to go far in life.
That makes a difference.
Yeah. And, but, you know, what these legislations do, whether they're passed or not, right? So the sports bill is going to be vetoed. We know it's going to be vetoed by the governor. He's announced that twice publicly. But is that it just creates these situations where you're going to go back in the closet. You know, Chloe mentioned how, you know, when she was in school, they created queer spaces. When I was in school, long time ago, in the 70s, you weren't even brave enough to create a queer space, right? You just isolated yourself. And that's what I did. I spent my whole time in my room in the dark, you know? And it wasn't until much later in life that I found a space and I found the gumption and the bravery to announce who I was, right? And it took a lot of work. And my concern is that we're going to be going backward. I will say, though, and that one of our board members, she transitioned in 1972, which I don't even know how you did that when there was no internet, there was no nothing. I mean, she literally found the one doctor in the state of Pennsylvania who would prescribe hormones for her. And what she tells me is it's not 1972. You know, it feels like, you know, we're in a bad place right now. But she goes, like, compared to where it was 50 years ago, we're doing pretty good.
Now, Corinne, you're touching on, you know, safe and brave spaces and your survival story back then, because like how Chloe's saying her queer friends created those spaces. How did transition look for you?
Yeah, so, you know, I've always known that I was different from the age of, you know, probably 3 or 4. And transition for me, well, I would say it comes on different stages, right? So, you know, through my youth, it was either ignored or I became really adept at shoplifting women's clothing as a teenager. And then luckily I got, you know, employed in a job where I could buy them. But, you know, I lived for, you know, the majority of my life, the first 50 years of my life, sort of in a don't ask, don't tell state where, you know, my spouse knew about my feminine side, but for lots of different reasons, whether it's family or job or stigma, you know, it's all stigma, frankly. It really sort of was in this don't ask, don't tell. She'd go visit her mom on a weekend once a month, and that would be my girls' weekend. And then finally, you know, when I turned 50, I was actually forced out of a company, and I started my own company. And that gave me kind of the freedom where I felt like, oh, I can do it. And so I've been transitioning now for 12 years.
That's why you're a rock star. All right, we're going to go take a short break. You are listening to QLV with our guests, Corinne Goodwin and Chloe Cole, and we are talking about trans rights. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Did you know that your phone is a radio? You can tune in to WDIY anywhere on the go with WDIY's phone app. Download for free from the Apple or Google Store, and your phone will become your trusted radio. The easy-to-use app lets you listen to WDIY on your phone live and access your favorite music shows on demand. Download and share the WDIY app with your friends and family and introduce them to many choices, real voices.
Welcome back to QLV. We are talking about trans rights with our guest Corinne Goodwin and Chloe Cole. Before we went to break, we were speaking to Corinne and Chloe about their experiences, and Corinne touched on something that was super important. You lost your job, and you created your own one. There's no protections in Pennsylvania right now.
No, there aren't. And so I want to make sure that I didn't lose my job because I'm trans. But what happened is I used to have some pretty big corporate jobs. I was a vice president of sales for a couple of large telecom companies and, you know, very masculine, hyper-masculine environments, frankly, you know, in when you're in that level and really in any company. And I just knew there was no way I could transition. So when I hit 50, and as happens often when you hit of a certain age, they look for ways to replace you with cheaper people. I started my own consulting firm. So that's what I do for a living, is I'm a business consultant. But doing that and working from home gave me the freedom where I felt I could finally transition. Mm-hmm. Because for decades, you know, I was in a space where I'm like, I will immediately be fired. I'll immediately be terminated. And this is one of the things that we hear. You know, we run six different support groups, and we hear it over and over and over again, is I can't come out because I will lose my job. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Pennsylvania is one of, you know, several dozen states that don't have written protections for employment. And one of the things that makes Pennsylvania a little bit unusual, though, is that, you know, we do have localities that have protections. So Allentown, Bethlehem, and Easton here in Pennsylvania have written employment protections. But where I live in South Whitehall Township, literally a mile over the border from Allentown, mm-hmm. I have no protection. So, you know, I could be terminated from my job. A landlord could evict me. They could refuse a mortgage to me, all kinds of things. And we really need to be thinking about this stuff as we move into this next election cycle, right? So how do we make sure that, you know, people are protected, not just, you know, people my age, middle-aged people, but I mean, but, you know, young people, because they have their lives in front of them, mm. right? And we want them to thrive. That's sort of our motto, right? You know, don't just strive. We want you to thrive.
And is there something that we can do with regards to, like, maybe writing our local representatives to get these protections in place?
Yeah. So we actually just did our first one this past weekend, and we're planning on doing two more over the summer. We're launching something called Advocacy Academy. We're doing it in partnership with ACLU Pennsylvania, the Human Rights Campaign, and the Pennsylvania Youth Congress, where we're going to be teaching people how to be an advocate. And we recognize that some people, maybe they don't feel comfortable getting out there and having a meeting with a state senator or a representative, right? Maybe they just feel comfortable writing a letter to the editor. Maybe it's giving some money to a local candidate. Maybe it's phone banking or door knocking or, you know, social media post. I mean, there's 100 different things that you can do to advocate for yourself and for your community. And, you know, we don't want to put anybody in a place where they feel uncomfortable or they feel like they're in danger. But we need to get queer voices centered. Mm.
That is very true. Now, we talk about Florida, right? And we're talking about, like, Governor DeSantis, and we're talking about Pennsylvania. And a lot of times, you know, people say it can't happen here, but now we are seeing it happen here. So what's at stake? What do you say to those who brush this off and say, you know, okay, now what?
Well, so the first thing I say is, like as I mentioned earlier, it's not 1972, right? And you have, you know, a community of people like you and me and Chloe and so many others who have your back, right? And, mm-hmm. you know, I will walk through fire for my community. I know Chloe walks through fire for her kids. And, you know, that should give you confidence. And then, you know, I think that the other thing that we need to really say is that, yes, there is danger, so let's come up with a plan to mitigate it or to eliminate it. Being passive isn't going to work.
Mm. And Chloe, your thoughts on that? What's at stake here?
Yeah. I mean, like, Well, let's just, I really like to talk more so about, like, liberty, freedom, and justice for all, right? Like, that's what's at stake. When we're talking about, like, all of the systems in which created this country, like, that's what's at stake. And I think that people need to understand that. That when we are, you know, harming and creating spaces in which people are, you know, being harmed and chastised and not able to get the medical services that they need, we are completely affecting that freedom, liberty, and justice for all that we are constantly flexing on whether or not who receives that, right, when we're talking about white supremacy and we're talking about, you know, all the different types of ways in which people have privilege, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's just simply that, you know, people deserve health care. People deserve access to the things that they need in order to live lives that are enriching and beautiful and their own, right? We talk about individualism all the time, like I am myself and I should be proud of myself and all of these things. And individuals deserve to have the space in which they can be themselves and get the health care that they need. So that's what we're losing, right? In like a very honest and truly like gritty way, we're losing those things.
Yeah, and you know what, if I can just pop on there too. You know, one of the things that, you know, we've discovered is that, you know, so for example, around the sports bill that, you know, just was passed in the House, and we spent 2 full days lobbying in the State House on this stuff, and we managed to switch a few votes, not as many as we needed, but we switched a few. And the way that you switch them is not by spouting out facts. So we can talk about that Leah Thomas, who is a trans woman who just won an NCAA podium, that her time was the 11th slowest in the last 11 years, right? And it was a slow field, right? She just happened to be the fastest slow person, right? We can talk about the fact that, you know, the people who sponsored this bill didn't find a single trans kid in the entire state of Pennsylvania out of, you know, 700,000 kids who play school sports who's dominating school sport. They couldn't find one. Those facts don't worry. What works is telling stories, right? And so telling a story about, you know, young girl Jackie who, you know, just got her driver's license. And the reason she just was able to get her driver's license because we helped her get her name change. And the reason why they were brave enough to be able to come out and do that was because, you know, their parents were affirming. And the reason their parents were affirming is because a teacher intervened on their behalf with the parents.
And touching on the sports, what do you say to those who want to, quote unquote, protect women's sports?
I'd say women don't need protecting. Mm-hmm. I think women are fully capable of protecting themselves.
Look at that. Whew. That's a statement right there.
Yeah.
That's a statement right there. Chloe, some might say that advocacy and activism are synonymous with one another. We came up together during the BLM protests in Lehigh Valley, which changed the local landscape dramatically. How can activism show up in opposition of don't say gay bills, or do you feel that it shouldn't serve that purpose?
Yeah, sure. I mean, like, it's an everyday practice, right? So, like, how do you dismantle systems, right? And it's consistency and being visible and showing up in ways that you can, right? Mm-hmm. And I think it's really important that, you know, I think a lot of folks, especially during 2020 and into 2021 and even now, think that activism is the protest and organizing this, like, outcry and this very public shaming of a person or a very public shaming of an organization. And it's not that, right? It's the healing justice. It's the every single day work that you do to dismantle white supremacy, homophobia, transphobia, all the isms and phobias, right? We have to engage in conversation each and every day. And it can be simple, right? Like, hey, this, I don't think this is an appropriate thing that we should be representing, and here's why, right? And it's that simple. It is not about, you know, whereas large protests is important and necessary to our movements because it does enhance our visibility and our outreach, public humiliation and public harm
isn't helpful either, right? Mm-hmm. We got to teach one another. We got to find ways that we can holistically work on these things and come to a place of solid ground and give each other education, because the more we do that, then the better our political and social landscape will be. We have to come from a place of empathy. And unfortunately, I think folks think it's forgiveness, but it's empathy and accountability, right? I understand you didn't understand this, right? And I don't know if I'm in the space of forgiveness, but I'm in the space to teach. Let's have this conversation.
Amen.
Yes, empathy and accountability, I think that's a lot of our love languages when you think about it. Oh, man. I'll let either of you take a stab at this one. If you could envision a Lehigh Valley 5 years from now, what would that look like for our community?
Go ahead, Corinne, take it on.
So one of the things, and you know, I see this in the trans community, I see it in the LGBTQ, you know, the broader community, I see it just, you know, across the whole spectrum of identities, I think, and it's not just the Lehigh Valley, it's everywhere, right? But in the Lehigh Valley specifically, right? So, you know, we run a whole bunch of different programs for people with transgender experience, and I see trans guys run to their corner, and trans women run to their corner, and non-binary people run to their corner, and people of color run to their corner, mm-hmm. and everybody needs to have their space. But we also need to realize that we're more powerful when we're together, mm. right? We become, you know, a transgender army, right? And, you know, I see the same thing in the LGBTQ plus community, right? You know, lesbians go one place and the gay guys go another place. And, you know, people of color go another place. The people who don't speak English well, they go another place. And everybody goes to their safe space. But we need to figure out a way to kind of figure out how to create these larger, more powerful conversations. Because when these communities, whether it's, you know, you're economically distressed or you're an immigrant or you're trans or you're whatever it is, when we figure out a way to work together as opposed to going in 10 different directions, that's when the change is really going to happen. Mm. And I see it almost every day. And by the way, the politicians, they know this. They know this, right? And so they have written strategy documents. You can find them on the internet, right? They say like, oh yeah, we're going to split the LGB folks off from the trans folks, you know, because they don't support, you know, trans girls in sports. So we're going to drive a wedge in there. And what they have found is that when they are able to drive these wedge issues, they can swing elections by 7 points. 7 points. Mm. So when you're in a crossover congressional district like we are here, a really competitive district, they're going to talk about these wedge issues till they're blue in the face, because they know that, you know, moderates and Democrats will move over onto the Republican side. And what you really need to be thinking about is, when that happens, what about the rest of the agenda? Mm. Think about what happens with deregulation and climate change and development. And do we really want more warehouses and less farmland and all the other stuff that's going on in this area? And so I think that my vision is, you know, we figure out a way, we all have our safe space, but we also all have to figure out a way to come together, mm, you know, and figure out our commonality.
And Chloe, 5 years from now, you guys are having a Project Silk reunion. What does the landscape look like that 5 years from now?
All right, Project Silk has been open for 5 years, so really super awesome that we've been able to give services to young people, to over 700 young people, in the last 5 years, so like super huge blessing, and I feel like it's more, but anyways. As far as like what I see the future, I not only everything that Corinne said beautifully said and on point, but in including this, I really want us to be able to solve issues and problems in a holistic and healing manner, right? I think it's time for us to come to a place on how do we use our skills in negotiation? How do we use our skills in empathy, right? When folks are harmed, or when we need to advocate for young folks who have needs, like, you know, homeless youth and youth of color and trans and queer youth, like, how can we use those strategies to teach when something is wrong, right? Mm-hmm. And I really want us to be able to call each other in when harm has happened, right? Because as Corinne says, she's talking about a utopia, right? That could be really hard to make happen because there is so much nuance to who we are as people and so many things that we've learned, you know, like so many things that we've learned that can be harmful to other people. So I hope in the future that there's more healing spaces, right? That we can have conversations about tension. I'm hoping that we can really actually work together and community organize, because I think community organizing can be this like convoluted idea that like we're all in this together. But no, it's like we're processing it together. We're understanding some of the isms and phobias that we've learned because of the white supremacy and which all affects us, right? And so that's what I hope in the next 5 years. Let's work on healing justice.
Let's do that. Chloe, where can we find information on Project Silk as a resource?
You can find information on Project Silk on Instagram at Project Silk Pride. And then you can always reach out to valleyyouthhouse.org and you can connect there. And then Bradbury Sullivan Center as well has resources on how to connect with case managers and other workers at Project Silk.
Awesome. Thank you for that. Thanks for sharing that with our listeners. And Corinne, where can we find your organization?
Yeah, so we actually have two websites. So patransequity.org, so that's the main website. And then we also have another website, Renaissance, RenaissanceLV.org. We wanted to have a really difficult word for people to spell.
I would have lost on the spelling bee.
But Renaissance LV, which is really focused on supportive services for people in the Lehigh Valley, where the PA TransEquity site is for a 16-county area. Oh. But then, and then also Instagram and Facebook. So follow us, please.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, Chloe and Corinne, I seriously wish we had more time allotted because we could really talk about these issues all night. I want to thank you for your advocacy, your activism, and above all, your relentless commitment to the LGBTQ+ community of the Lehigh Valley. I'm excited to see what you continue to do out here, and I'm hopeful for the present and future of our youth through adult age under your guidance. So thank you both again.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thank you, listeners, for making time for this conversation. You can also find past episodes and other public affairs programming at WDIY.org and on all major podcast platforms. I'm Justin Parker Fields, and this is WDIY 88.1 FM. Tune in next Thursday for more Lehigh Valley Discourse, and we'll see you next time on QLV.